League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blankers. I am Branham. It's Brian behind the glass, and it's a getaway edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Friday edition of the Killer Bees. How are you guys doing? How's Houston treating you?
Weather ain't great, but based on your video you posted, your weather's a lot worse. Glad you made it.
Which video are you talking about?
You were snow all around you from the from Manhattan, Kansas.
You're on TikTok now, Blankers?
No, I'm never on TikTok. I've never been on TikTok.
Well, that's the only place that I videoed.
No, I either saw it on it has to be on either Instagram or...
Oh, that's right. It did go on Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I forgot that I put it on Instagram.
You ain't going to catch me cutting good. Rug and doing any of that TikTok stuff.
You don't have to cut rug on TikTok. I don't cut rug.
Okay.
Yeah, it might be gone anyways by the 19th, so you might be... You might be right about this whole deal. Yeah, it was good morning. Everything went smooth. You know, the plane got out good. It got here early. There is a lot of snow everywhere, but the roads were good. Had some good lunch. Had some coffee. Like, yeah, things worked out pretty good today.
That's good.
So I had a good morning. I'm ready to go. I'm energetic, and I'm happy to be here. We got a busy show. It is a Friday before a Saturday Houston Texans football game. Of course, they play the Chargers tomorrow. We'll discuss that in great detail. Kelly Eco, after the biggest win of the season for the Rockets? Question mark. He'll be joining us at 4 o'clock. Thunder maybe? This
I
one?
Think the Thunder
probably
game.
Top three.
Yeah, I think the Thunder game and then this game are probably right there. I like the Mavs game early in the year when they beat a full-strength Mavs team, but I don't think it competes with OKC 1 and probably last night too.
Yeah, so we'll discuss that game as well. Kelly Eco joins us at 4. We're not going to ignore in victory either with the Rockets like we do with the Texans. DJ Bieniemy would join us at 5 o'clock, and then, of course, we got BZ Money, where we're going to hand you a bunch of winners for your wild card weekend around the NFL. How about this game yesterday? I love the college football playoff. I know it didn't get off to a great start, according to some people. People didn't like to see the blowout. Oh, they should have kept it at 4. It should only be 8. Blah, 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 blah. I really enjoyed this game last night, Blankers.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slugfest in the mud a little bit in the first half. Unbelievable second half. Kept you on the edge of your seat. Had plenty of action. And when you talk about it, as you mentioned, with this college football playoff, this was the ideal year to do this, you know, if they were going to do it and expand, because you go to the Texas-Arizona State overtime game, and yes, you can tweak things and change things, but there's been some enjoyable football, and I think people are a lot more dialed in than just average, hey, this bowl game, that bowl game. This has been a lot of fun, and that was an entertaining game last night.
Yeah, it was a good one. You know, not much going on in the first quarter. Ryan, who's in the Twitch right now, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, he nominated himself for Bad
Take
Boulevard because he was talking crap about that game, and it turned out to be a really good one. I didn't have a dog in the fight. I didn't have a lion in the fight. I didn't have an Irishman in the fight yesterday. I really don't like either one of these teams, if I'm being honest. I'm not a big Notre Dame guy. I'm not a huge Penn State guy, not a big James Franklin guy. He got mad at me once and took off his headset and stormed off of our radio program at
really?
The time. Yeah, he was nominated for some like Coach of the Year thing, and it was at the flag. It was over at the Highway to Hell, previous Radio Life, and we were interviewing him. And it was right around the time he had two players that got in trouble, and I think kicked them off the team or he kept them on the team.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And I asked him about it, and he gave me a one word answer, took off his headset, and left.
So, wow.
Yeah, I irritate. See, I irritate other people, Blankers. It's
yes,
not
you
just
do.
You. It's not just you. So, anyways, yeah. So, I don't like either one of these teams. Like, I really don't. But I found myself yesterday pulling for Marcus Freeman. I think I'm a Marcus Freeman guy. I don't know if it's the good looks. I don't know if it's the impeccable hairline. He's just easy to root for, and I found myself rooting for him the entire game.
I don't disagree with you, and I think I don't remember who said it, but they made the point similar to what you just said, because I'm with you. I don't have a dog in the fight last night. I don't really care for either team. But the Marcus Freeman factor has changed a lot of people around the country. And someone was saying on ESPN, I think it was last night, that there has always been a ton of hate. You don't have to have a team, period, but they hate Notre Dame. But all of a sudden, because of this Marcus Freeman story and because of the way that he's done, everything the right way, seemingly, and, he's got six kids and he's personable. He's an ex-player. Everybody's starting to come around on Notre Dame. And if you didn't have a dog in the fight last night, a lot of people felt your way and were pulling for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think I want him to win a national championship. I really do. I've never said those words in my life. I was celebrating whenever they lost to Northern Illinois. I'm not a Golden Domer. I talk trash to Joe George being a Golden Domer, which he still owes us over a year now that he owes us on that bet. Still doesn't pay up. But I've never, ever, ever pulled for the Irish until last night. I really like Marcus Freeman. I would root for them in the national championship game. I don't really like Ohio State. My feelings to Texas. I want the Irish to win it all. As a complete outsider, I am pulling for Notre Dame.
I you know what? I don't have a dog in the fight either. And with two Big Ten teams, it's hard for me to root for Penn State or Ohio State ever. I'm not a Texas guy either. You know what? I like Marcus Freeman. I like the way he comes across. I'm not pulling for anybody regardless. Last night, I was looking at Drew Aller play terrible all game long and saying, I was upset the way Penn State, no matter what James Franklin does to piss people off and rub people around. And he was trying to rub Marcus Freeman the wrong way all week.
You think so? I thought that was overblown. I didn't think he was trying to big brother him. I saw that take out there.
Even in the post game,
I didn't see the post game.
Yeah, I just, to me, it's like, just let it lie and let the cards fall where they may. But don't, at this point, you're there. That's all that matters. But I really enjoyed the fact that Notre Dame made it a game. They came back. They could have, started, folding up their tents or figuring out they couldn't stop the run. And Penn State probably, to their discredit, didn't run the ball nearly enough, I don't think. But overall, when you look at it, I think Notre Dame showed that they belong. That was a great win for them. And I think they got a legit chance against Ohio State or Texas.
Yeah, they Texas, Oklahoma, and Ohio State tonight. I really need Ohio State to win for my Big Ten better than the SEC this year argument. So I think I'm going to root for the take tonight as I pull for the Buckeyes over Texas. I will say, I think this number is too big. Like, I don't feel the difference between Ohio State and Texas is 6 points.
I would agree with you. And they're already putting out numbers for the national championship game, and Notre Dame-Texas is like a two-point game, and Ohio State-Notre Dame is a 6.5 to 7-point game. I don't see
it. That doesn't add up.
I don't see it. I think that from the standpoint of tonight, I think it's going to be a close game. I think Texas has, similar to Ohio State in a lot of ways, they have a ton of talent on both sides of the football. It's just, can you play the complete game? Can you play the entire game? Texas let Arizona State back in. Ohio State has been completely inconsistent all season long with maybe the best talent in the country. I think it's going to be a closer game than the spread says as well.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one to watch. Did you know Marcus Freeman, apparently, I just pulled up his Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. He was a member of the Houston Texans in 2009.
No, I did not know that. I know he played at Ohio. He played at Ohio State, right?
Yeah, he played at Ohio State. I don't think he never played in a game at all in his NFL career. And it looks like he was probably like a future reserve guy.
Okay.
Because he was drafted in the 5th round by the Bears in 2009. He was waived. That's crazy. He was waived in September after being a 5th round draft pick. Then he was picked up by Buffalo to their practice squad. They released him October 5th, and then the Texans signed him November 4th. So maybe it was just a practice squad type of deal. And then he retired in the next spring due to an enlarged heart condition.
Really?
It's crazy. Former Texan, Marcus Freeman. Maybe that's why I was subconsciously pulling for Marcus Freeman.
Maybe.
Is that somewhere in the back of my mind?
Never quit.
You know what? I think it was Cal McNair's motivational tactics for those 2 months that Marcus Freeman was a Houston Texan that has led him to coaching greatness and has brought Notre Dame back to prominence.
Never never
cash
quit.
It or trash it. I mean, how could you be not be like if you're around that quote, Kyle McNair? How could you not be a great college coach someday?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got burgers and all kinds of nourishment and love, and you know, but sure,
never quit.
Never quit. I was going to say something else, but I forgot. Drew Aller looked like Will Levis yesterday, too, by the way. He, like, people were saying that he's a top five pick.
I'll tell you this.
How about Greg McElroy right before he throws the pick, said, oh, I trust him. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's smart. He makes good decisions. They should go down and let him try to get in field goal range. And, picks it off right away.
I was laughing when he said that. And then the other thing is it reminded me a lot of when CJ is not right on his game. Because it was a lot of like what we've seen previous to this with when everybody used to make all the cases for Davis Mills, and I'd say on an out route, he'd hit the guy in the third row selling popcorn instead of the, oh my God, he could not make any, that one with the running back walks into the end zone. All he's got to do is put it out in front of him and makes it the most difficult catch in the world on his back hip and low. He just couldn't make any of the easy throws. He made the easy throws hard last night.
Yeah, he's not any good. At least he didn't play well yesterday. What did they end up giving credit to that wide receiver yards because on that last lateral play? Because before that, they didn't have one single yard from any of their receivers.
It was all tight end?
Tight end and running backs. They didn't have a single yard from their wide receivers. And it still might have ended that way, but I feel like they gave a yard or something to that receiver on that lateral.
Wow, yeah, I didn't know that.
Depending on whoever ended up with the ball last. But didn't Drew Aller just throw it out of bounds? That was the last part of the lateral.
That was the second to last play. Yeah, he did throw it out of bounds. You're right. Yes. There was two plays in the final drive. The first one, he took the snap, threw it out of bounds.
Right.
And then the actual lateral play, it pitched back to
him. The last part of it was Aller throwing it out of bounds. So I don't think a receiver will get any credit for receiving yards if the last part of it is Aller throwing the ball out of bounds.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like the college and NFL stats are a little bit different. Like I know that, but I'm not sure if they gave those to Aller or not. Yeah, so you had Warren, of course, a tight end, 6 catches for 75 yards. Nicholas Singleton, who's their running back, he had 2 catches for 33 yards. You had Dinkins, who had 2 catches for 21 yards. He is also a tight end. Luke Reynolds, who is also a tight end, had 1 catch for 7 yards, and then 1 catch, 6 yards for Katrina Allen, who is also a running back. And then you had Harrison Wallace, 0 catches, -3 yards, and then Drew Aller, 0 catches, -4 yards. So I guess they did give that lateral to him. So Wallace had -3 yards with zero receptions.
That's crazy.
That's weird. How did they both have zero catches for negative yards?
I guess it'd be part of the lateral, right?
Yeah, lateral.
It'd be part of the lateral.
I didn't realize they split it up like that.
I didn't either, but that's
the only explanation. So they actually calculate on every lateral whether you gain or lose yardage?
Yeah, they do.
If the ball goes out of bounds.
I think it's a college thing. College is also where if a quarterback takes a sack, that's taken out of his rushing stats. So college is like Jeremy said earlier, it's scored differently than the NFL.
In the NFL, it's a team stat. But, if you have a negative 10-yard play on the play, you have to, you know, mark down the negative 10 yards. So where it goes is – I didn't realize they split the lateral. I thought it was to what Brian was saying. I thought it was the last person that had possession. But there you go. 0 players for for Penn State yesterday. 0 receivers had any yards.
That's crazy.
Positive yards. Wallace had -3. But any positive yards. 0 catches, too. No catches.
Crazy. And like Joel mentioned earlier, like if Aller can put that ball on Singleton, I mean it turned what should have been a walk-in touchdown to a field goal. Obviously, it was early in the game; lots of things would have played out. I'm not saying it cost them the game, but it was a 3-point game, and that play took 4 points off the board.
Yeah, that was a fun game, though. Enjoyed it. Notre Dame. Do you know that they're the last independent to win a national championship game? I heard this listening to ESPN 97.5 coverage yesterday.
Huh.
I don't think you'll ever guess it. I don't think you'll ever guess who the last independent was.
Let's see. How long ago? Like decades?
Well, obviously Notre Dame won in the 80s.
Actually, that would give it away. This was after Notre Dame won it in the 80s.
Oh, man.
I don't think you're ever going to get it.
It's not coming to me.
Yeah, me either.
Let's tease it going into the break. And if somebody has it on the other side, don't look it up.
Someone will Google it. Yeah, I won't, but someone
don't
will Google
yeah it. Actually guess trivia question. If you win, we'll give you a shout out. 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. Kelly Eco joins us at 4. DJ Bienemy joins us at 5. BZ Money, who said it? Busy show. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're also on Twitter live at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It is the Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925.
Follow ESPN Houston on social media at ESPN975.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Yeah, so no one got the answer right. Last independent to win a national championship, 713-780-ESPN. Just been any time guessing?
I was talking to Brian about it, but I think he was answering calls and talking to you. But I knew basketball independence back in the day, but I... Football independence.
Yeah, I was thinking at one point, like, was there a year Miami or Florida State was independent? And
Miami.
I did it.
Miami, yep. Hurricane.
As soon as you said it, I was like, oh, that's right. Miami wasn't independent. There you go.
So I remember them in the Big East, obviously ACC, but I couldn't remember if there might have been a year in there where they're independent.
Nailed it. There was four straight independents that won it, actually. Four straight independents won a national championship. Different day, right?
It's 88, 89. I'm trying to think of who else that would have been.
Was
BYU Miami one
was
of them?
Last.
Oh, BYU.
No, BYU was in the WAC, and they won it in 84.
Okay.
I thought they were independent, too.
Colorado wasn't independent when they won, right?
No.
Oh, that's right, because you said Miami was the last anyway, and Colorado won in the 90s.
Colorado was in the Big Eight.
Yeah, that's right. Just tell us the other two.
Well, I mean, one of the other ones would be Miami. Miami did it in 87. They did it against in 89. Notre Dame's last national championship came in 88. And then the first independent that started the four in a row was Joe Pa's Nittany Lions.
Oh, they weren't in the Big Ten then?
They were independent in 1986. I did not know that. So you had four straight independents. Penn State, Miami, Notre Dame, and then Miami. It's pretty crazy, isn't it?
That's a good trivia question.
Independent. Yeah, I was listening to yesterday was my mother's birthday, so I took her some dinner and we watched the game over there. And then as I was driving home, I was listening to the ESPN 97.5 because the dial never turns off of that. And, that's where I learned it. I would have never guessed. I also would have never guessed, so that's where I got it. These texters are wanting us to talk about Kyren Lacy. Do you see this story? LSU receiver Kyren Lacy, who's projected to be a first-round pick in the upcoming NBA draft.
I just saw the headline on ESPN.
Yeah, so he's getting let me pull up the story. That way I don't – this is a very serious story. I don't want to use words that shouldn't be used. He's being charged with negligent homicide, felony hit and run, and reckless operation of a vehicle, and he's wanted. Reading the story, he was, kind of speeding and swerving through traffic, and he went into the other – I guess it was like a one-way each way. Those highways have – it's two lanes, one each way. So he went around a car, got in front of it, caused somebody to swerve, led to a crash, someone died. So, he wasn't actually involved in the collision, but he led to the car wreck that ended up killing a 78-year-old man. And he fled the scene without rendering aid or calling authorities. So, he's been issued an arrest warrant. The Louisiana State Police has arrested an arrest warrant for Kyren Lacy. So, we'll see how that story plays out, and everybody's deserving of all the truth and telling their side of the story, but it doesn't look good. The initial reports do not look good for Kyren Lacy.
Man, that's terrible.
Yeah, somebody lost their life because he was driving recklessly.
I mean, that's...
Unfortunately, MidCon kind of common. I mean, obviously, Georgia had a rash of players.
Well, what's the Raiders?
Jalen Carter.
The Raiders receiver that...
Henry Ruggs.
Ruggs, there you go. Man, that's awful.
Yeah, bad news. Segueing to what are your top storylines for Texans Chargers? 713. Don't laugh, Brian. That's a very serious story. It's a bad deal. 78-year-old man is dead. You're over here laughing it up. What are your top storylines for Texans Chargers? 713-780-3776. What are your top storylines, Blankers?
Well, I think that for me, it's the Texans are underdogs at home, and you can take the whole narrative of no one gives them a chance. I think they have a chance, and I think this is a way for them as difficult as it has been for us because we, you know, we've been so dialed into it all year long, to them to kind of put everything of the regular season behind them and start to set a new narrative if they can win this football game. And I give them a more than a fighting chance. I think they can win this football game. And if I had to pick them, I'm leaning towards picking them in this football game because I think that at home they're going to play the right way, and I got a good feeling about this game.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel. I keep going back and forth on it. I saw the Chargers board the plane, and they were wearing like LAPD, LAFD, and I was like, okay, like that kind of they have the good story, right?
Yeah.
And then the Chargers ownership committed $200,000 to it, and then Hal and Canna earlier today committed $1 million to it. So I wonder if they stole the good vibes. I wonder if they stole the karma by five timing what the Chargers owners donated. Like, I don't like to put my hand in other people's wallets, but it's weird that the rival's donating five times more than you are. Hopefully Cal gets the Chargers owners to spend a little bit more money. But, yeah, I go back and forth on this one. I think the Chargers are good. I think the Texans can be good. I think that the Chargers are really well coached. Herbert's playing well, not turning it over. Stroud's in bad form. But I like the Texans' defense. They're usually good at home. They play up to competition, also down to competition. So I'm going back and forth. I'm excited to see how it all plays out. But in terms of my favorite storylines, I really want to see how the Texans play again at home in a playoff game when they're not like having their greatest form. I feel like they've kind of stumbled into the playoffs. I don't know if they've ever played their best football, but I feel like their better football was earlier in the year, maybe the midway point, especially defensively. So, like, do they come out looking different? Do they come out looking – and we've also heard, like, they're not physical. Like, do they look like the most physical team on Saturday? So I would point to those two things as probably my favorite top storylines.
Yeah, I think for me, I agree with you. They didn't play their best football late in the year. But I also look at all the talent that's there, and I believe that – whether they admit it publicly or not, I think there's a little extra motivation, and they can't, you know, completely tune out the fact that everybody's basically saying the Chargers are moving on to the divisional round. And I think that when you've got a veteran-laden team now with some of the guys in key positions like Mixon, like some of the defensive players, I feel like this is they're going to come out really fired up, and I want to see them get momentum early, get a lead early. And I think the defense can pin their ears back, and I think they can get to Herbert. I think it comes down to the running game and the pass rush for both teams. And I think that if the Chargers can't run the ball and they can really focus on just kind of going after Herbert and pinning their ears back, I feel really good about them. And I feel like if Mixon can run the football, I think that their offense is going to get going.
Yeah. It's hard for me. Yeah, that sounds great in theory. Them running the football would be fantastic. That would really help their chances to win. I don't know if it's like a necessity, though. Like, it depends on how the game's played out. Justin Herbert's been very careful with the ball, but if he throws four pick sixes, they don't really need much from Joe Mixon. We were talking at the beginning of the year that we want the Texans potentially to be an offense that throws the ball 60% of the time. So if they're having trouble with the running game early and then C.J. Stroud has like this heroic game and throws for 350 yards and Mixon has 30, you know, like they didn't really need the running game. So I think that there are avenues and ways to win with them not running the ball well, but obviously it helps.
Yeah, I just think in this case, especially because everything's so predicated by the offensive line, if they can set the tone by being able to run the football, that's one thing. But when you have the defense the Chargers have and you got a safety like Derwin James, and if you're able to run the football, then if Derwin James starts, because he loves to hit and he loves to get in the mix in the box, that if he feels like he's going to keep sneaking up, he's going to keep coming up, he wants to help stop the run, then maybe that opens up Nico and some shots over the top to where they can really get the passing game kind of feeling good about themselves. I know that when Mixon hasn't played or hasn't played well, it's really kind of magnified the passing game and their struggles. So that's why I just want to see – I really personally want to see them get the running game going for that.
Yeah, I just – I agree that if they run the ball well, they have like a better chance to win. But I can see a path where they don't run it well and win. I can also see a path where Mixon runs for 100 and they lose. Mm-hmm. So like the game script obviously would have a huge influence on this. If Stroud plays poor in the playoffs, it will make Texan fans wonder if he is the second coming of Josh Freeman. A great rookie year that fell off and never replicated that first year success. Did Josh Freeman, was he good in his first year?
Did he go to Kansas State?
Yeah, and I think he played for Tampa Bay, right? But I just
that sounds like, right.
pulling that name out of thin air just feels odd. That's the name you go to, Josh Freeman?
That's crazy.
Okay. Yeah, Freeman also wasn't good his first year.
Yeah, like the name there would have been RG3, right? Someone that was amazing his rookie year and then fell off the fell
kind
off
of
the
BY
face of the
too.
Yeah, well, BY was rookie of the year.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say he was great. He just went. That's a whole other conversation. Okay. But yeah, that fits.
Yeah, I mean,
Josh Freeman though, that's a weird pull.
That's an unbelievable pull.
Yeah, Freeman was not as good as rookie year though, so it's not a good pull.
Yeah, it's not even a good pull.
He only started 9 games. He was 3-6. He threw 10 touchdowns and had 18 interceptions.
Yeah.
Like he was poor as a rookie.
Bad job.
Poor as a rookie.
Job,
see, I think it'd be more like Andrew Luck, where like they started off really good, kind of faded away, and then retired early. I think it'd be more like Luck a little bit, minus the retiring early part of it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Yeah, I don't hesitate going back here after the Freeman take. Texans going to win by double digits. This regular season is over with how they played, and regular season is irrelevant. How they played in the regular season is irrelevant, I agree. Except it kind of shows you who you are. You know what I mean? Like, usually you're a pretty good sample of what you're going to be in the playoffs based on what you were in the regular season. So, like, if they suddenly flip a switch and, like, they have this high-octane offense, how many people would actually believe that's plausible? Not me. Not me. I don't think that they could be a team that all of a sudden scores 30 points and racks up 40 yards a game. I think they're going to have to win games by mucking it up and winning primarily because of their defense.
Yeah, I think I can see that. I don't know. I guess I have an unrealistic approach to the fact that I think from an offensive standpoint, I think CJ and the offense can get going. Maybe that is unrealistic. I believe in his abilities. I believe that he still has the weaponry there. I believe that they're capable of putting up a big offensive number. So I hope it doesn't come down to the fact that that happened. But whatever it takes to win, obviously. But I believe that their offense can get going tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I feel like after 17 regular season games, they've told you who they are. You know, like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe all of a sudden, whenever they get to the red zone, instead of settling for field goals, they start getting into the end zone and scoring 6. It's just hard for me to believe that to be true based on their red zone failures all year.
Yeah, and to the listeners. Point, I can't say that the regular season means nothing. I know it's behind us now, but it set the blueprint for everything that we are expecting or wouldn't surprise us because of how inconsistent they played, because of the position groups that have failed, because of all the different things that we've seen to know what from the coaching staff on to say that this hasn't been their best brand of football all year.
Texans, this guy sent in a prediction. It says Texans 27-23, Chargers 24-21. I don't know what that means. A few texters as well saying BYU was an independent when they won it in 1984. Wikipedia says they were in the WAC. I thought they were an independent, and Wikipedia proved me wrong. If you can prove Wikipedia wrong, that'd be great because that would mean I'm right. But Wikipedia says they were in the WAC in 84. Texter Josh Freeman, year 2, 25 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 3,500 yards. Moving the goalposts. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Since we got to the C.J. Stroud conversation, I stumbled on some stuff that actually has me worried about C.J. Stroud. I'll let you know in on the secret whenever we return. It's the B's ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. So I was just prepping the other day, and I stumbled on this old Sean Payton quote. I think it's been recycled, and people were talking about it. It was like, we should have known Sean Payton didn't like Russell Wilson, and here is why. Here was Sean Payton talking about sacks and their destruction of the offense and who he attributes sacks to.
I think the sack statistic, by and large, is more a quarterback statistic than an offensive line statistic. There's some quarterbacks that are more difficult to protect forward, some that aren't.
Okay. So Sean Payton saying that sacks are mostly quarterback problems. How much do you attribute sacks two for the quarterback and the offensive line?
I think it's a – I wouldn't say a 50-50 mix. I think it's more – I would go 65-35 offensive line. I think that we know from the Deshaun Watson era that they're – you know, when quarterbacks try to extend plays and they hang on to the football too long, that leads to a lot of sacks. But we've seen plenty of offensive linemen get their doors blown off, both, you know, tackles and guards, to where you know that if you have a less than offensive line, and we've seen it here the last couple of years as well, enough to know that poor playing offensive lines give up a boatload of sacks. So I understand how a quarterback can be responsible for sacks, but I think it's still primarily on the offensive line.
Look, the Texans' offensive line hasn't been good based on like any metric, eye test, like Pro Football Focus ranks offensive lines, and Texans are like 22nd in the NFL. I think I'm probably 50-50, though, because a quarterback can still get rid of it. Like, have some feel, right? Like, have the ability to know where the pressure is coming from. Feel it. See it. Get rid of the ball. So, like, I totally understand where Sean Payton's coming from here. And I kind of agree. I wouldn't put it mostly on a quarterback, but I think it's fair to split the blame. Now, a quarterback having pressure in his face right away, that's 100% on the offensive line. Quarterback can't do anything about that. But if you sense the pressure, you see the pressure, you can get rid of the football. I'm a believer of that. You know where to be able to put the ball to get rid of it, even if it's not completing the pass, which are going to affect your numbers, but at least it's not a sack. At least it's not second and 16. You're looking at a second down and 10. So I agree with Sean Payton. Look, I think Sean Payton is a really good offensive mind. I think he's proven it more this year maybe than ever before, or at least has, you know, proven that he can still coach, because, you know, a lot of people would say that the Breeze, you know, he was able to rely on his success, and look what he's doing with Bo Nix. He has him in the playoffs with a rookie quarterback. So I think that Peyton's done a good job. So starting there, quarterback does have some blame, maybe not a majority of it, maybe not half of it, depending on who you're asking. But then I started to really dive in on how much time C.J. Stroud has to throw based on what Sean Payton said. And NFL has next-gen stats and all of this where it actually measures a quarterback's time to throw. And it measures it based on the time that it's snapped until the quarterback gets rid of the ball. Now, it does not count sacks, which is kind of weird to me, so just throw in that caveat. But time to throw, C.J. Stroud, of like 44 quarterbacks who have the minimum qualifications to qualify for this stat, has the fifth most time to throw at 2.98. Now, the quarterbacks that are ahead of them, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Sam Darnold, Justin Fields. Mobile quarterbacks that are buying time, so it's going to lead to more time to throw, right, if you're not measuring it until the time that you get rid of the football. So I was like, well, I wonder how quickly they actually see the pressure, because I feel like this is unfair to quarterbacks who have some escapability, because if they buy time, well, their time's going to go up, and it might not be a testament to their offensive line buying them time. So I was able to find pressure. It's called pocket time pressure, and this measures how much time that a quarterback has on average from the moment the ball is snapped until they see pressure. So I think this is the better number. C.J. Stroud's tied for fifth with the most time before he sees pressure. Jalen Hurts first, Sam Darnold, Deshaun Watson are above him, and then you have like Lamar, Bo Nix, Justin Herbert, Brock Purdy, C.J. Stroud that are all tied for fifth. So the numbers will tell you that C.J. Stroud actually has an ample, I wouldn't say a lot, I would say an ample amount of time to throw.
Yeah, that's surprising to me because, I mean, we've seen it on a consistent basis where the pressure comes from all different directions at any given time and almost on every single play. And I've commended him all year about his ability to move the pocket, slide up, you know, his footwork and being able to create some extra time. But if it's broken down like that, it just doesn't seem that way. I'm not going to say it doesn't add up because there's a lot of people that obviously spent time on that. It just doesn't seem that way when you watch them play every week.
Yeah. The numbers don't look great with the time to throw, pressure rate, whenever you look at Stroud's numbers. Because it's like, hey, he stacks up amongst the top five in the NFL with ample amount of time to throw. And if, like, he didn't take as many sacks last year, right? We all know that. This year he's had 2.5 seconds before he sees pressure on average. Last year, when you pull up the numbers from a year ago, he had 2.5 seconds before he saw pressure. So, like, it's the same. So why is it worse? You know what I mean? So that's part of the, like, I wonder how much of this calculus when we see sacks is on C.J. Stroud, and we probably don't give him enough blame.
Is it two, though, that you say that the sack isn't actually computed in? But
well, one of them it is. Time to throw it is not, which I think is a flawed stat. I agree with you. But whenever you look at the pressure time, that one does calculate it.
Because I think that unlike a year ago, we talked about it. Like the first 2 weeks of the season, they gave up 11 sacks. Then they shut out the Steelers, and that started them where they actually were protecting better. But I think that there was a lot of sacks consistently in the first month of the season, to where it changed to now whether he has time or not. Now it's changed his internal clock. Now in his head, he feels like I'm going to get hit, pressured. I'm going to feel a guy on me. So now I'm rushing things, and I'm not making the same kind of throws, same kind of accuracy, same kind of completions. I'm not saying that that's exactly what it is. That's just one idea came to my head when you were saying that.
And it would also back up the whole, like, he's a beat late. Like, okay, maybe the time's the same, but he's a beat late. And we know that in the NFL, whenever you win on the margins, a bit late is the world of difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we talked about the anticipation throws. Like, he's not making the anticipation throws that he was a year ago. So maybe last year he was releasing the ball. This year he's not releasing the ball. And, yes, the offensive line would factor into this and, like, his whole, like mentality and his psyche where the offensive line currently is. Texter, you can blame Carr for all them sacks in his rookie year. Yeah, I think that it's a combination of both. Running backs and running game also factor in, absolutely. Like, if a defense respects the running game, I think it is harder to get to the quarterback, but that wouldn't affect the pressure time. Can you throw offensive coordinator in on the sack blame game for not calling more short or quick routes when the defense is getting pressure? You can. I would say that's kind of being it's kind of being hypocritical, though, because how many people like blast Slowik whenever he calls screens? So, like, on one hand, not to say that you're doing a Texter, but on one hand, Slowik gets blamed for calling screens, and on the other hand, he gets blamed for not calling quick passing throws.
Yeah.
Like, what is he supposed to do? He's darned if he does, darned if he doesn't. Another Texter, all those false starts, offsides, putting CJ behind the chains and all the sacks, O-line has been trashed. Yeah, those probably all contribute to this. I just feel like we probably are letting CJ Stroud off the hook, and there probably is some accountability with him getting rid of the football. He may have time to make throws, says a Texter, but what if the route runners are not in positions to make catches? Well, Stroud should probably throw it in a spot where it's incomplete, quite frankly. Like, throw it behind him where the defenders are not. Throw it at his feet. Mm-hmm. Like, throwing an incomplete pass is way better than a sack. Way better than a sack.
Yeah, no. I mean, we talked about it from the standpoint of the game last night with Aller, and he actually said he was trying to throw it. That's what you're taught. You're taught that, you know, not every ball has to be completed or be catchable. Just get rid of it, because the difference between throwing it away and taking that, you know, 5 to 8 yard loss is massive. I just think it's the blame. There's plenty of blame to be spread all across the board, and it's not as bad as the David Carr time. But at the same time, I do think that once that internal clock in your head gets altered, I don't think it goes away or it's easily fixed to go back to where he was. And I think that it's hampered him all season long. But I think everybody has a share in the blame. I think Slowik has a share in the blame. I think CJ, the entire offensive line. But the bigger thing is, how fixable is it for all parties involved? Like, the biggest thing,
long term, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, specifically, I think that my take on this is we're probably, yes, everything's a factor. I agree. Slowik's a factor. The offensive line's a factor.
The receiver.
The receiver's ability to get open, a factor. I feel like we in this city probably haven't put enough blame on Stroud being a factor as well, though.
Well,
it all matters.
Yeah,
and no, I feel like Stroud gets a pass more than all of the other three factors we just mentioned.
I think that's true. I think, and that's simply because of the position that he plays, because he became the darling of the franchise, the city, and anybody that's a fan of the team with the way he played a year ago. And so now, you know, don't you dare talk about my quarterback. Don't you dare point a finger at my quarterback. And I think that because, you know, he was anointed one season in to being the franchise quarterback, and I think that was rightfully so, I think that there's a hyper level of defensiveness that goes with that. That's why they want to dip everybody else in the grease other than CJ. And when you do point the finger at CJ, they take offense to it.
Our defense is disguising more coverages now that they have film on Stroud compared to year one. I would imagine that it's always went on, but probably more so this year. And then also you start to see what a guy struggles with, and then you start to see more of that. So, yeah, that's probably played a factor as well, and Stroud might have trouble kind of seeing these disguised defenses. Also, quality receivers and type of play factor in. You can just get rid of it quicker, but he needs first downs. If no one's open, you just throw it away or force it into coverage, but that doesn't just get first downs. I agree with that, but look, if you're at a third down and 7, would you rather the quarterback throw it away or throw it at a receiver's feet knowing it's going to be incomplete, or take a sack? Like, the incompletion is the better option. And Stroud's, like, raw sack numbers this year, he has 52 in 17 games. Last year he had 38 in 15 games. His sack percentage last year was like a little over 7%. This year it's at 8.9. His sack percentage is almost up 2 full points. It's crazy. That's why whenever we talk about, like, offensive staff changes, I'm in favor of it, because the sack numbers are too high. Stroud doesn't look nearly as promising as he did a year ago, and the offensive line has more talent on it than it did a year ago. So this is maybe even, like, a greater take is that, like, hey, let's have a change to the offensive personnel, like staff, not personnel, staff, and then maybe some personnel.
Yeah, all right. I just wonder, Jeremy, from the standpoint of just looking at it both big picture and just, you know, from the microcosm of what is the playoffs, is it fair to say it, whatever it is, isn't going to be fixed till next season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to our first segment, too. Like, they've told us who they are for 17 games. We know the warts and flaws of this team. That's not going to be fixed overnight. There's not, like, an elixir that's going to fix that.
See, I feel the same. I feel that way, and I feel like, yeah, whatever's going to – from the pass rush and the sacks and the offensive line, I don't think any of it is going to be rectified till next year, and that's unfortunate, but that's the situation they're in based on what they've done all year. I also think that there is, if you want to look at glass half full – but I still believe in his abilities enough to say that this could be a blessing for him for the big picture, because I think that, you know, with the year he had in his rookie season, there's, and then, you know, he's feeling himself in the offseason, and he's got a ton of confidence, that for him to have to dial it back down and kind of dig back into the playbook and see and, you know, self-correct, that might be, for the long haul, a blessing for him, for the franchise, for everybody.
Maybe so, yeah. Can't you argue that sometimes it's better to take sacks than make an errant bad throw that could be intercepted? Yeah, but I think really good quarterbacks can throw incompletions. I think really good quarterbacks are great at throwing incomplete passes. They know where they need to go if they're in trouble to get rid of it and not get sacked. Like, Peyton Manning was the slowest, most unathletic quarterback ever, almost never took sacks. He had an exit plan. He knew what he was going to do if the worst case happened. Every single snap, he knew what he was going to do when the worst-case scenario happened. I don't think Stroud's there.
The best quarterbacks know, and sometimes we see these throws go, that's got to be grounding, and then when you look at the replay, no, he had a safety valve back that was in blocking and then kind of slid out a little bit, threw it right at his ankles, and it was the absolute right play because the officials can't throw the flag, to the point where they also know that as long as there's a receiver in the vicinity, they can throw it a worm burner, and they can get away with it, and that's part of developing, being a really good quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, rodeo lineup is out. Who are you going to go see at the rodeo? 713-780-ESPN. What are your must watches at the rodeo this year? It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Kelly Eco covers basketball for the Athletic. He'll be joining us in studio. He'll be joining Blankers in studio at the top of the hour, coming off the Rockets' top three wins of the year. A podium win last night for the Rockets in Memphis, a game that neither team wanted to win late. Rodeo lineup is out, Blankers. This happened right when we went off there. They were waiting for us to go off the air before they released their rodeo lineup yesterday. 2025 livestock show and rodeo. It opens up March 4th, the best leadoff hitter of all time, the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, the leadoff hitter you didn't even know that you wanted to be leading off. Reba McEntire opens up the rodeo on March 4th. It closes on March 23rd with Luke Bryan in between there. You got Journey coming to town. You got Post Malone. Old Dominion gives off they're going to take a break from basketball. They'll perform on March 19th. Cody Jinks, Parker McCollum, Brooks and Dunn, just to name a few. Bun B, the birthday bonanza. Bun B's birthday bonanza will be performing as well. Who are you going to see at the rodeo this year, Blankers?
Absolutely nobody.
Sheesh, buzzkill.
Yeah, I don't rodeo. I used to be a big fan of the cook-off. I have a lot of personal reasons as well why I don't rodeo.
What reasons?
Those aren't going to be aired out, Jeremy, on the airwaves. But there
Do you blame
are
me for trying.
This sounds vindictive.
There are some of those. No, so that I'm not. There,
okay. Are you allowed on the grounds of NRG?
Oh, absolutely. And the cook-off was phenomenal, can't-miss time of my life.
So you got personal
beefs. Every year. I think that
if I
was to choose, I think, and I saw this after they made the announcement that Bun has come for the last 4 years now. This will be his fourth year in a row.
Sounds right.
But this, with his birthday extravaganza, they said he's still going to have his special guest like he does every year, but he's going to have a big special guest, a bigger name, I guess, that would be intriguing, something like that. So, and Post Malone, I think, crosses genres a little bit. He's got a lot of, my daughters even love some of Post Malone's collaborations, but if I was to pick two, I'd pick those two.
Zach Top is performing on March 11th. Is he kin to ZZ?
God, that
boy, oh boy,
1.2.
Yeah, rate that joke.
Brian laughed.
I thought my
you laughed.
I thought my Joel has beef joke was bad.
You laughed.
You went with the Zach Top related to ZZ Top joke.
Did you laugh? I'm pretty sure you laughed.
I guess I heard a laugh. I thought it was more of a chuckle groan, but okay.
We were talking. I've never taken my wife to the rodeo. She's been in Houston for 5-6 years now, whatever it is. and I've never taken her to the rodeo. She was giving me grief about it yesterday. I don't love crowds, quite frankly. But she was giving me grief that I've never taken her to the rodeo, so I think I have to do it this year. Although she's more interested like in the fair and stuff than she is the actual like concerts or whatever. But if I were to go to one, I'd want to go to Post Malone. Like, Post Malone would be at the top of that list. Parker McCollum's good. Luke Bryan's good.
Parker
I like
McCollum's
Cody Jinks a little bit, too.
Lake Conroe?
Is he really?
He's from in this area, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think that's true.
Actually, I think he's active on Twitter, isn't he? Isn't Parker McCollum active on Twitter? I think he tried to dunk on me once. I really think he did. No, I don't. I don't. I'm sure it was something Texans related. And I can't remember what it was. I wish I did. Maybe I'll search for it.
What was the
recent? Could it have been the Will Anderson trade thing?
Let me see if I can find it real quick. You guys talk.
Who's the country music star that's a Carolina Panthers fan?
So you're gonna. I don't know very much at all about country.
I don't
music,
either.
So I'm not really the right person.
It's
to
It's a
ask
big
about
name.
This.
Jeremy might know, but it's a big name. He's
Carolina.
He's a big outwardly Carolina Panther fan. And I saw a tweet where McAfee posted it, where they were going back and forth about it, and he wasn't happy with the Dave Canales hire with the Panthers, even after his first season with Bryce Young. And he's like, yeah, I mean, we hire the 21st rated offensive coordinator. You couldn't have gotten me top five? You couldn't have had 21 of the other guys that we could have gotten? And Pat McAfee's like, oh, man, you are a fan.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember who that was. I can't find it, whatever it was. Yeah, but I would Post Malone would be the one.
I'm with you
on
Post Malone.
I like Post Malone. Yeah. He's good. He's talented. If I was going to go traditional country, which I do like country, you noobs. You guys live in Texas. You've been in Houston for a majority. Well, Brian for a majority of his life.
You just
Brian,
all my life.
Yeah, you don't have to be a noob. You just have to have taste.
I didn't say
I just don't
I
know
hate
taste. Personal
together.
Taste.
I just
yeah,
don't like new country.
I'm with
My
you on that
goodness.
Too. I like
casual.
There's guard.
I've got Johnny
Tim
Cash
McGraw.
and Waylon and Willie Nelson
Willie Waylon
on my
and the
phone.
Boys.
But
I got
not,
Garth,
not
Tim McGraw. I got old school country.
Look at y'all trying to gaslight. You talk about how much you don't like country music.
I don't like
well,
new
look
country.
At me. Look at these countries. That's
I
not
can,
what you
I can
said.
Show it to you. It's on my phone. I just don't like the new stuff.
I've heard some
casuals.
Of Morgan Waylon and some of the new ones
like
that
Morgan
my daughters
Waylon.
Listen to.
I like Morgan Waylon's
music. Don't
do the
accent.
Maybe off the
stage
isn't the best from Morgan Waylon. Yeah, Waylon's big time, man.
I had some help. Is that Morgan Waylon?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. You're talking about the guy that sings
Is
the,
it Chris something or other?
No, you're thinking that would be Chris Stapleton.
No.
No.
Hang on.
You're thinking the guy who sings that long neck cold beer, Ain't Never Broke My Luke Combs.
There you go. I think
yeah,
that's
it's
right.
Luke Combs.
Yep. I think
long neck, cold beer ain't never broke my heart.
Yeah, he was dunking on Dave Canales.
Yeah, he's I think he's from the Appalachian. He's like an Appalachian State guy too. He was a host on Game Day. I think he was a guest picker on Game Day whenever they went to Appalachian last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, he wears a Panther hat on stage a lot. I just Googled it. Yeah, it is Luke Combs.
Post Malone, Reba, and Grupo Frontera.
Don't
go to Hanaday. I do like go to Hanaday.
They were pushing the Journey thing. Steve Perry is still not fronting Journey. I know they got two guys that sing a majority of the songs and sound like Steve Perry. But if I want to see Journey, I would like to see Steve Perry lead Journey, and he's not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cover band is what it is.
I feel like that might be an old man take. I don't know.
I don't think so.
713-780-3776.
I'm curious. If I want to see, like, you know, older, you know, like some of the bands that toured for a long time, I don't want to see them with some dude that I don't have any clue who it is singing all the main songs. That's a cover band.
Is that an old man take? 713-780-3776. I'm curious.
I don't think it is.
I'm legitimately curious. It sounds like I'm being a jerk and, you know, dissing them, which, I mean, yeah, I can understand why you would think that. But I'm legitimately curious.
One. Like, if I'm paying, you know, to go see the rodeo, I don't want to see, like, a guy that's not the original singer singing for the band. It does feel like a cover band at that point.
Blankers doesn't rodeo because his first serious girlfriend left him for a rodeo clown, Tyler and Conroe. We don't do mean text anymore, Tyler. That's not true.
Tyler ain't far off, but there's a lot more to it. And it ain't like that, but yeah, there's a lot to that.
Now I really want to hear the story.
Mm.
Off air?
Maybe.
You know him personally?
Who?
Tyler and Conroe.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Brandon T, Zach Top is not well known, but he's dang good. Parker went to College Park High School in the Woodlands. Oh, that's right near me. That's cool. Yeah, I knew he was from, like, North Texas. I didn't realize it was that close, or north of the city.
I almost moved my parents here, and they almost lived in College Park. And I think College Park started as an over 50 community, and then it blew up, and then they got the high school and everything.
College Park. Yeah, it's right down the road from me.
Yeah.
Yes, Branham, it's not a hint anymore. Take her for your sake. I need to. Luke Combs, tell B-Mac, Zach Top, and Charlie Crockett sound like old country. There you go. Go have a cold beer. Listen to some Zach Top and Charlie Crockett.
I'll give a listen to a couple of those.
Google it. Did Post Malone tip $20,000 to a waitress? Charlie Crockett.
Okay.
I heard that he did. Definitely need Steve Perry. No one said that's not really answering the question. He's crazy talking without facts.
If Foreigner tours without Lou Gramm, if Styx tours without Dennis DeYoung, if Journey tours without Steve Perry, then are they really those bands that did those songs? Because my opinion, they're not.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, obviously this is not an option anymore because Eddie Van Halen's also dead. But like it was like going to pay to see Van Halen when David Lee Roth wasn't at the...
I disagree because of the fact that they had their own second chapter with Sammy. But
they're playing songs that David Lee Roth sang and it's now, right. Sammy, yeah,
exactly.
I wouldn't want to...
Yeah, I don't like that.
Okay.
They did try the one tour where they each fronted Van Halen during doing songs from
their
when they
songs,
were fronts.
Yeah.
And then they got like almost throwing fists at each other and so pissed off at each other that they just blew up the tour.
Would you go see Queen with Adam Lambert?
No.
All right. To each their own. 713-780-ESPN. Kelly Eco covers basketball for folks who pay him to cover basketball, like The Athletic. We'll talk to him about the Rockets. And then Kelly seems like a rodeo guy. We'll ask him who he wants to go see at the rodeo. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
What's your name?
ESPN 97.5. KFNC 97.9. HD2. Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Presented by Zadok Jewelers.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.